We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Friday, or Fry-yay, as I usually call it. And it's great to have my coffee this morning, and it is just a wonderful day. And it's very exciting because in just a few moments, we have Matt Walsh joining us. I had an opportunity to interview him earlier this week on his brand new film, Am I Racist? That comes out in theaters today, which is why we are playing it today. And it's an amazing, amazing comedy, documentary comedy, so maybe dramedy, and asks the question of what does doing the work means? Because kind of the opening montage of this film, and you know, don't worry, I'm not going to give you a lot of spoilers, but I think you can kind of guess where Matt Walsh is going with this. In some of, you know, the opening montages, there's this question of a racism and how we are taught in this country, according to the left, that systemic racism is an issue in this country and everyone who is white is born racist and we need to, quote unquote, do the work to eradicate systemic racism if that is possible. So what does that mean? Because Kamala Harris has said this, a number of, you know, anti-racism advocates, according to the leftists, and, you know, there's this whole pile of books that, you know, you can get from your local bookstore that, you know, is probably more of the left wing sort of version. But, you know, there's all this stuff on, you know, quote unquote, doing the work. And it sounds a lot like the vague platitudes that Kamala Harris continues to talk about, even in terms of her own policy. Because when they say do the work, what does that actually mean? So Matt Walsh goes on this discovery journey to become DEI certified in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and actually talk to some of these people who are suggesting that racism is systemic and ask, well, what does that actually look like? What does that mean? What does it mean to do the work? And went on this amazing journey. And I've had the opportunity to see this film twice now. I saw initially the screener, the advanced screener that Daily Wire gives to some of us who want to comment on this movie, help promote it, because we think it's a great project. And then also I was able to attend the premiere in Nashville on Monday, and that's where I interviewed Matt Walsh. And it was actually great sitting in the theater, listening to, you know, the several hundred people that are in this theater just reacting to this movie. And a lot of them were seeing it clearly for the first time. And it was actually more fun, in my opinion, to see it for a second time. So I'd encourage you, you know, go this weekend, tonight if you can, you know, help make this a big box office hit. Because if the more people who go see it, the longer it'll be in theaters. It's the same way when the documentary that John MacArthur's Grace Community Church and Grace Productions put out, The Essential Church, on that whole religious freedom case and talking about what that church and others went through during the COVID pandemic and standing up. I learned through that whole process, because I was part of that movie in the production, with my role as one of his attorneys, that the more people who go and see it at the box office on opening weekend will then expand it to more theaters, and the longer run it will have. And for this type of a film that is produced by a very conservative company that is teaching a very good message and a very important one for more people to see, especially, you know, teenagers that go and they say, ah, you know, what's playing, and, you know, let's just go down to the movies. This is an opportunity in the left's realm, which is the entertainment industry, to actually have not just a positive moral message or a good story, but actually some, you know, anti leftist, actually pro-truth education that's packaged in a comedy that is very entertaining. And really, it is just remarkable how it's done. So go and watch it, and even go and watch it a second time, because I think it's better even the second time. So with all of that said, and without further ado, go to iamracist.com, get your movie tickets, and here is my interview with the star of that film, Matt Walsh. Joining me now is the great Matt Walsh from Daily Wire, who is the undercover star of the brand new movie, Am I Racist? So Matt, you are now DEI certified, laminated card and everything. Tell me, what has this journey meant to you?
It has been very revealing. It's been a difficult journey. I've had to confront so much within myself. So it's very, in the film, we travel around the country, but it's really an internal journey too. That was the hard thing, is traveling deep within myself to, discover my own latent inherent racism. Not to give any spoilers away, but also to discover by the end of the film that there's nothing I can do about it because I'm white, so I'm inherently racist, and we all are. And so we should consult with the DEI gurus to atone for our sins, but then also we can't atone for them. So that's the catch-22. You just got to live with it if you're a white person.
And just continue to pay more money, apparently, because that was one of the things that really surprised me in watching this film, was how much money these people who are the race coaches and DEI coaches are actually making when you sit down with them to just learn that there's nothing you can do about it. So, I mean, is this really just one big grift?
I think it is a big grift. It certainly is one big grift, and the money... It must be a major motivation for them. And as you point out, we acknowledge in the film how much we pay these people to appear in our own film. And we decided we want to do that early on because that's part of the story, that these people are in it for the money. And so in some ways it's just like the classic story of people, money corrupts and all of that kind of stuff. But I don't think it's just the money. I do think that there's more to it than that. There's also, of course, there's power and influence that they get out of it. And then also you detect, especially when you're in the room with these people, there is, not surprisingly, I suppose, just like an immense amount of arrogance that they have. And that comes from the fact that they have positioned themselves as these kind of moral gurus, these moral instructors. And people are coming to them to find out how they can be better people. And so I imagine that even without the money, just like being in that position is a huge ego stroke for them. And so they get something out of it that way, too, I guess.
Well, and that's also what was fascinating, was to see that it almost seemed like these people didn't really believe what they were selling. I mean, there were a couple of interviews, and again, not to give any, spoilers for people who haven't yet seen the film, but the people whose groups you were in or who you sat down one-on-one, specifically Robin DiAngelo, I mean, the author of White Fragility, she seemed really uncomfortable actually articulating her own message. And so do you think that there's just an internal conflict with these people when they're confronted with the reality of their own failing worldview?
I think so, and that was one thing we ran into making the film, is that some of the craziest things that they profess, I think that the grifters anyway, they know that it's crazy, like they know how it sounds, and so they're very reluctant to say it out loud. Most of them, starting with their kind of like fundamental belief is that racism is an inherently white construct, and that white people are inherently racist and nobody else can be racist. You're not white, you cannot be racist. That's what they believe. But to get them to articulate that is more difficult than even I thought it would be, given that it's like their fundamental belief system. But they don't want to articulate it because they know how it sounds, and they also know that they can't defend that. So that's one of the reasons that we took the approach we did in the movie, this kind of satirical approach where I'm just agreeing with everything they say. And some of that's just like the entertainment value of it. But also if I had gone in with like an ounce of skepticism, we would not have been able to get these people to do or say anything, to reveal anything honest about themselves, because they would just clam up, and because they're very careful in that way.
Well, so what about the other people in these groups? Because some of the clips that, you know, have already circulated on social media, one of them is a group that is all of these white people, including you, with one black moderator or leader. Were the other people in the group actually buying this, or when they actually discovered it was you, and they seemed really irritated with you? I mean, did you have any conversations with them later to be like, guys, this is kind of all BS?
Well, with that group, I didn't have any conversations later because they called the cops on me. So I kind of had to split before the 5-0 showed up. But, those people, all the people, they're all real. You know, we didn't pay any of them to be there. We pay the so-called experts to impart their wisdom, but all the real people are real and they're there. And I could only assume that if you're going to show up to something like this, whether it's that group you're talking about or the Race to Dinner group, I can only assume that you must be, for the most part, a true believer. Otherwise, why in the world would you subject yourself to something like this? So there might be some virtue signaling going on, I'm sure, that they want to be able to brag to their friends that, oh, you know, we went to that white grief support group, or we went to Race to Dinner. But I also think that that they believe it, and that they're fully brainwashed and bought in.
Which is just such a sad commentary on our culture. And so with the broader perspective that is the basis of showing the ridiculous worldview that this is embracing, to say that racism is inherent, you can't do anything about your whiteness, but you should do the work anyway, where is our culture headed with this? And what message do you hope that people who watch this take away from the film?
I like to think that there's many in our culture are waking up to the scam and are just getting tired of the constant racial berating that goes on. So certainly that is happening with plenty of people in our culture. DEI, you know, itself is taking on a very negative connotation with, I think, most people, which is good. But all that means is that the Robin DeAngelos of the world, they're not going to go away. They're not going to pack up a shop and leave. They're just going to repackage it. You know, they're going to stop talking about DEI. They're going to repackage it as something else. And so we have to look out for that. As far as the takeaway, I think, you'll see in the movie that we talk to these so-called experts that are pushing this stuff, but we also talk to normal people who are outside of the DEI bubble, and white and black. And for them, it's just like something like systemic racism. They never think about it. They don't talk about it. It's not part of their life. They're not obsessively focused on race or racism. And I think that's how most people would be generally in modern America, if not for the constant berating and brainwashing done by these con artists.
Yeah, I think con artist is the right term. And last question, Matt Walsh, and I so appreciate you joining. I love this film. I encourage everybody to see it. AmIRacist.com is the URL. Go and see this movie. Do you have the $30 approximately of reparations that Robin DeAngelo actually paid? That was in a New York Post article shortly before the film was released. Do you have that like framed somewhere at Daily Wire headquarters? I feel like that is such a win for conservatism and for the con artists. So tell me you guys didn't just like, you know, go spend that on coffee or something.
Well, look, she didn't pay it to me. I'm white. So she paid it to our black producer, my black friend, one of my 17 to see the movie. And he has it. I'm told that we've asked him what he's done with it. He claims that he's framed it, but for all I know, he did go spend it on beer or something.
All right. Well, we'll wait till he posts that on social media. But Matt Walsh, keep up the good work. I just so appreciate everyone at Daily Wire. And thanks again so much. The film is Am I Racist? Go to amiracist.com. And so appreciate you joining for our American Family Radio audience. Everybody loves you and appreciates the satire and all the work that you do. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. I appreciate it.
All right. That was my interview with Matt Walsh. And again, go to amiracist.com and get your movie tickets for this weekend. It is playing across the country, so find a theater near you. And then help if you are on social media, if you have friends at church, if you have friends in community, if you have friends at all, and I'm sure all of you have a lot of friends, tell them about this film. They may not yet be aware of it. Bring some friends. I'm actually going to see it for a third time this weekend because I want to support it in the box office as well. And I'm bringing some friends along and saying, you know, let's all support this great project from a really great company, Daily Wire. So go to amiracist.com and then let me know what you think about the movie. And you can also post it on your social media, tag Daily Wire, let them know that, and have a great time. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR, preborn.com/AFR.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back. So let's continue our conversation about this whole grift that is the left's push for diversity, equity, and inclusion, and how they are really trying to just make racism a thing, because race will always be a thing in the sense that we look different. We have different melanin colors. God made us different. But in the sense that there is only one race, the human race, and we are all human beings made in the image of God, have the same inherent dignity and worth. Racism is manufactured by people who do not believe in the concept of truth that is predicated on the Judeo-Christian God of the Bible, and do not see human beings as all the same in terms of value. And this is how we get to racism, we get to sexism, we even get to the issues in abortion, and we also get to the issues in so-called completed life bills or physician-assisted suicide, where we don't value the dignity and value the worth of every human being from conception all the way until natural death. And we say, well, you know, are you really a benefit to society, and on what metric, and who gets to determine that? So all of these things that are implicit in the whole diversity, equity, inclusion are also really hypocritical, because when the left talks about equity, they're also trying to then make everyone have the same outcome while still pushing for diversity. So it's actually a completely hypocritical position, and it's mutually exclusive when they're saying that somehow everyone should have the same outcome, but we need to also celebrate our differences. And as Matt Walsh points out in his movie, in this incredible scene where he's talking to Robin DiAngelo that I mentioned is just my favorite part of the movie, where he's like, well, you need to, you know, see that a person is black, but not really see that they're black, but then kind of sort of you need to, and like, how do you navigate that? And it just shows how utterly futile their responses are to this manufactured sort of perpetuation of racism. So joining me now to discuss all of this, and I know this is like a really broad topic, and that's why we have Fridays, which is great, is one of our favorite guests on this program, Orin McIntyre, who is a host and writer at The Blaze. So Orin, with that setup, where do you want to start?
Well, I think that the thing that for people to understand is that DEI serves two purposes, of course. One, it is the attempt at an intellectual undergirding for left-wing power. It creates this nexus of ideologies and gives some way in which you can knit together the different groups, the different coalitions that actually make up the left, who often have radically different beliefs. I mean, you have people who are pushing for the transing of children, while you also have traditional Muslims inside the same coalition. How does that work? Well, you need a pretty radical attempt at ideology in order to glue those together. But the other thing it does, of course, is acts as a patronage network. And this is a massive part of this that often the right doesn't understand. They spend a lot of time arguing with the ideology. That's understandable. There's some value to that. But they often ignore the way in which this creates a political organization where the left can pay off the people that it wants to. Its supporters can receive money. There are thousands, if not millions, of people employed inside DEI positions, DEI bureaucracies, wielding these kind of ideologies for their own profit. Inside every school, inside every corporation, inside every government institution sits an office like this, and they act as basically government commissars pushing this ideology, pushing this pseudo-religion for profit. And so you have a situation where, yes, this underpins a moral system, an ideological system. It glues a coalition together politically. But also, and very importantly, it creates a funnel of money constantly feeding people who otherwise wouldn't have jobs. And this makes them extremely loyal to this ideology and to the Democratic Party.
That's a really fascinating observation, that with the broad differences within the Democrat base overall, they have to basically manufacture an ideology to try to bring this coalition together, where on the conservative side, we have the concepts of freedom, liberty, and truth that should bring us all together. And we understand that we may look different. We may have other differences in terms of vocation, in terms of, even how we raise our kids, and, some of those things. But if we are all focused on what our founders were all unanimously agreed on, that our rights come from God, our creator, and the sole purpose of government is to preserve and protect those rights, which include liberty and freedom, and promote human flourishing, promote good, restrain evil, then that's our ideology that should bring us all together. But the left doesn't have that. So they have to manufacture this ideology in order to bring them together. And yet we see the drastic inconsistencies in the way that they're pushing for DEI, and it is ultimately, you mentioned, this is a big money funneling sort of power driven thing. Ultimately, it breaks down, and I'm always really surprised when the left just ignores some of the realities that are present in those inconsistencies, and they just gloss over it, like the fact that we just can't all have equal outcomes. We can have equal opportunity, but we can't have equal outcomes, and it just doesn't work that way. And in every society that has ever tried communism and equity on that sense, it has resulted in utter disaster, and everybody fails instead of everybody succeeding, but they just want to totally ignore that. And that seems like what Kamala Harris's vague view of just running on joy, and like let's hearken back to the great days of the Obama 2008 campaign is trying to project, because they know that they can't sell this on the rationality of the idea, so they have to sell it with emotions and feelings.
Well, I think that ultimately Kamala Harris has been pretty open about what she wants, no matter how much the media lies about it, no matter how much they hide it. She's been very clear that she's not interested in equality of opportunity. She is interested specifically in equality of outcome. And to be fair, that is a message that resonates with a lot of people, because they believe ultimately that's what the promise of equality of opportunity means. The only way to measure equality of opportunity is the ultimate outcomes. But the problem is that just observable data shows that consistently we have different groups that outperform others. You can come up with whatever, you know, explanation you would like for that truth, but it continues to show up in educational data, employment data, you know, crime statistics across the board. Now, if you are just on board with the idea, look, we all have the same constitutional rights, we all start in the same place, and then wherever we end up, that ends up, maybe it's the individual, maybe it's the community, maybe, you know, you can come up with whatever explanation you like, but if our fealty is to this idea of equal opportunity, you know, where we start so that we all have that ability, well, that's great. You know, that works. But like you said, when we come to this idea that instead we have to force every group routinely to come to the same conclusion, that's where things go off the board. And that's where we end up with things like the total state that I wrote a book about, because you need a state with ultimate power to manufacture the same ultimate outcome. The only way you can guarantee a quality of outcome is to control everything. There is, in the real world, no way that every person or every group ends up in the same place, even if they all have exactly the same opportunity. So the only way to get everyone to that outcome, that equal outcome, is total control and centralization of power by the government.
And that's so true. Orrin McIntyre, my special guest this morning, is a host and writer at The Blaze, that this type of government control and manufactured reality has to be then foisted upon society rather than just going along with the laws of nature and of nature's God. I mean, if you leave a man to discover the realities implicit in the laws of nature and of nature's God, and we discover how the world works, then there are principles that are set according to the dictates of reality and the sovereignty of God that for his purposes presented us to the universe as we understand it, and we can discover it instead of trying to manufacture a different reality. And so the left has to try to continue to foist this on us instead of assisting and underpinning human flourishing, which is the natural state. I mean, we know this is a fallen world, all of those obviously biblical principles, but when people work, when they do good, when they want to provide for themselves and their family, they want to be productive, they want to be creative, inventive, and go out and achieve and earn wages and, you know, all of those things, that is more natural than this manufactured DEI concept of the left that doesn't work. And it was really interesting to me in Matt Walsh's movie when there's a portion of it where he says, okay, now that I'm, you know, DEI certified, which is hilarious because he actually like went online and just, you know, got a little certification, which everybody knows is ridiculous. But he's making it a comedy where he's like, now that I'm certified, I'm going to go out and share my knowledge, you know, to the people who really need it. And he goes into like, you know, super South Louisiana and is just talking to some of these regular people and saying, you know, have you ever heard of this, you know, DEI? And they're like, no, I mean, you know, we're just here and we love America. And they are making fun purposefully, I think, of this type of what the left would like to perceive us to perceive as this super intellectual way of looking at the world, where common sense, regular, hardworking Americans don't even think about these concepts, and they don't need to, and they're actually happier than these Ivy League elitist snobs like Robin DiAngelo that are trying purposefully to create this ridiculous alternative. And so I say all that to get to this question, Orrin. When you have a lot of people still in America that don't even know what DEI means, they're not interested in these concepts, is the left winning at trying to manufacture this reality?
Well, like you said, so much of this is artificial, and that's the entire point, is to create this artificial edifice. I mean, think of all of the stuff they're pushing. You know, think of the, you know, the gender transition, the mutilation, the, you know, the drugs they're trying to push on kids. These are all completely artificial, and they would fall apart the moment that the left isn't there, the infrastructure isn't there. And they you're right that they like to play this game of pretending, oh, well, I'm very intellectual because I've memorized all this. I know all the codes. I do all the code switching. So you're using the wrong term. There's a new term. That's the term term we should be using now. I'm much more intelligent than you because you don't spend your entire life memorizing this stuff because you actually have a life and you don't need an existence that's artificially produced because you're, you know, in a community, having children, part of a faith tradition that matters. These things that really bind us together. And so they draw their meaning from this hyper artificial reality that they pretend is highly academic, and they scoff at anyone who is living in the actual reality, one that is, that produces normal results. I think it's actually important that people don't memorize this stuff, that we don't turn middle America into a bunch of people who run around trying to memorize every leftist academic discipline. I think that, you know, there's a certain value in explaining this stuff to people who want to know about it so that they understand what's being used against them. But ultimately, actually spending all of our time chasing this is actually a mistake. You know, Aristotle said that what makes man good, what makes man fulfilled, is following his telos, finding the thing that he is meant to do inside the community, fulfilling his role, being the best father, being the best mother, being the best servant of God. These things are the things that actually make us happy, actually create human flourishing, and they are the most real and organic things. And I think when we have people grounded in that, that safeguards them from the DEI. What safeguards them is not the memorization of every DEI thing. It's not getting hyper-academic and knowing all the terms. What safeguards them against academic nonsense, things that are completely manufactured and really not academic at all, is being grounded in truth, in that community, in that telos.
Yeah, and this is exactly what the Bible tells us to do, is to be grounded in the Word of God, understand His truth and His purpose for human life and for the Christian life. And ultimately, we know that the purpose for human beings is to know God, to love and worship Him, and then understand His plan for our lives. And in that model, when we actually look at the manual from our Creator as to our design and purpose, and we follow that, then we end up experiencing not this sort of saccharine, artificial joy that Kamala Harris's campaign is projecting, but the true joy that is in knowing and loving God. And this is what I just so genuinely wish was present more among conservatives than just saying, you know, hey, let's not talk about the abortion issue. Let's not talk about religious liberty. Let's not talk about all of these things because, you know, we've got to win. And I'm thinking, talk about these things so that we can win, because these are the things that genuinely resonate with human beings because we have the Word of God written on our hearts. And I know you've talked about this extensively, Oren, in your book and elsewhere, that getting back to these core principles of conservatism, that we're conserving truth, we're conserving something, not that we're trying to go back to the past, but we're trying to take the principles and the eternal, unchanging principles of truth forward, really needs to be at the heart and soul of the American experience, and especially the conservative movement. And so where are we at in terms of that process as well, when we are trying to contrast between the lies of DEI with actually advocating for truth?
Well, you know, the real problem is that while, you know, we often call ourselves conservative because we are, as you say, trying to bring those eternal truths into our current lives, continue that chain of being, continue that tradition. You know, we don't want to live in the past. We do want to be part of the present, but we know that it's important to bring that wisdom and that truth forward into our current lived reality. But at the same time, conservatism is a mindset, and conservatism is a disposition. And so for a lot of us, we recognize the institutions around us as the things that are supposed to perpetuate those values. But those are no longer on our side anymore. As you point out, as the documentary, I'm sure, points out, I haven't got a chance to see it yet, but I'm sure it's great. You know, as I'm sure they point out, you know, these institutions have been infiltrated and corrupted by DEI. That is what they are serving now. That is what they are conserving. That is the ideology they are actually perpetuating. And so it's a very strange shift for a lot of conservatives, because we know the importance of that tradition. We know the importance of that truth. But we also know that the institutions that are supposed to protect and perpetuate it are no longer involved in that. And so what we need is new institutions. We need to be building. It's not enough to simply preserve or conserve what exists now, because that has been corrupted and infiltrated. What we need are alternatives that are going to bring those true values, that real conservatism, conserving the things that actually matter, not this updated DEI nonsense, and that can only happen when we build things outside of the system. So that's why it's very critical for people who are talking about, you know, how much they don't like what's happening with the current institutions to put their money and time where their mouth is. What are you building? What community institution are you involved in? Are you involved with your church? Are you involved with a civic organization? Are you raising funds for an alternative college or for a new way for people to seek employment that doesn't require them to invest themselves in this DEI bureaucracy? Are you involved in some of the promising fraternal organizations that are helping people to serve their community and find ways to exist outside of the current DEI matrix? These are the things that defined America early on. These are the voluntary institutions that Alexis de Tocqueville talked about in Democracy in America that he said made America work. We fell away from those. We allowed all the large bureaucratic institutions to take over and manage that stuff for us, and they have failed us, and they are no longer conserving those values. So in order to conserve things, what we actually have to do is build anew. That's the challenge that we're facing.
And this is a part of what you describe in your book, and it's called The Total State, How Liberal Democracies Become Tyrannies. You can get this on Amazon or anywhere that books are sold by Orrin McIntyre, and it's a great book, and I highly recommend it. And you're absolutely right that the institutions that have been captured by the left, we need to build conservative institutions. I mean, one of the things that my home church in the state of Florida is doing is building the, or I should say rebuilding the model of saying churches used to always have schools attached, where this wasn't just, mm-hmm. you know, on Sunday mornings, but we were educating kids in the biblical worldview. And that's one of the things that they are building, is to combat the state-funded institutions of school that indoctrinate with Marxism, and focusing on teaching children the truth about America, history, our founding, the truth of the Word of God, and all of these principles. And it's great because this is a way to that the church can engage a civil society and also the family by building up these types of institutions. So that's just one example, but it's why we have to be engaged in our civil society, also in our church, and especially in our families. So Orrin McIntyre, always appreciate your thoughts and comments. Again, his book is The Total State, How Liberal Democracies Become Tyrannies. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back. And I hope that this whole conversation has really encouraged you to invest in civil society, because so many of us, I mean, we know as Christians that we need to invest in our marriages, we need to invest in our families, we need to invest in our children. And that's very personal to us. But investing in our civil society also should be personal to us, because it is part of our Christian life, and it is part of how we then protect the opportunity and the freedom to invest in our families and in our churches in the way that the Bible requires us to do, and to live the Christian life and to be able to do that in a free and functioning society. And, you know, when I talk about the broad idea of government and its legitimacy, often, you know, here on the radio for regular listeners, and talk about the three spheres of government that God ordained, the civil government, the church government, the family government, and legitimacy, and, you know, all of these bigger concepts, it really comes down to the fact that we talk about all of these other issues in politics and news of the day, but because it matters ultimately to our very foundation. And we can't separate just the news of the day and what we think about individual politics and policies and elections and decisions and things like DEI in a vacuum. Because if we don't take DEI and then say, okay, well, what is the worldview that that's teaching? Why is this so important to the left? What is their view of God and morality and truth? What is their view of government? Why are they perpetuating this? Do they think that it's actually good for society? Do they have a good faith interest in promoting this? Because people can have good faith. I mean, they can be absolutely wrong, but with good intentions. And then some people are just wanting to promote ideas out of nefarious motives or bad intentions or simply personal reasons that override the good of the whole. And so there is this concept of the common good that we should use as a metric for civil society that of course, is rooted in the morality of truth that comes from the biblical worldview. But not to say that common good is somehow common in the sense of corporate, it takes a family or it takes a village and, you know, these kind of broader community concepts from the left to say that we all need to have the same interests and this is why we ultimately need to establish communism. So the left takes this principle of truth of the common good and perverts it and then says that somehow we need to override individual interests for the common good. And so you need to own nothing and be happy, you know, all of those types of platitudes. And they take what is a truthful premise and they distort it and they pervert it into a completely different ideology. So we need to define what the common good is, which is ultimately a society that best promotes human flourishing and protects individual rights, but for the whole. And so this is a more complex concept that it is why it's so difficult sometimes for conservatives to advance our values in a media marketplace that is so interested just in short talking points. And you have heard me say this before for regular listeners, but this is why I love, love, love the radio format as opposed to, you know, social media or television, I mean, which I still do a lot of both of those media formats. But I prefer radio the most because it isn't visual. And it is long format. So you're not distracted by, you know, a bunch of different things like what does the set look like? You know, what does my hair look like today? What, you know, all of those other things that we can get distracted by and critique rather than focus just on the content and the message. And it's very difficult for conservatives, much more than the left, to actually have this type of complex idea and all of our values and discuss truth in a simple talking point or a simple phrase. This is why the brilliance of Make America Great Again, that whole phrasing from the 2016 campaign of Donald Trump was brilliant. And he is a brilliant media master. And taking that phrase and encapsulating so much, and it's a little bit vague on purpose, but I think that the whole idea of greatness is tied to the American experience. And we all feel a sense of patriotism for the conservatives, especially those of us who saw what his message was in 2016 and are now also saying with the question that his campaign has presented, you know, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? You know, obviously pre-COVID and before all of that whole disaster, but in, you know, the height of the Trump administration. Those are very good questions. But to actually market this and market conservatism is kind of where we're at in a society that is so consumer-based. And this is why it's so important for us to not just have an education in these type of topics and in what diversity, equity, and inclusion actually means, what Marxism means, what communism means, and then also what conservatism means, what the biblical ideology is, what freedom and liberty actually mean. All of those things, we have to have a mastery of it so that we can talk about it fluently, coherently, and really boil it down into sound bites when we are on those types of media formats, or you might just get one opportunity to have a conversation with a friend or a neighbor, or even someone in the grocery store. Some of my favorite conversations are with people that I'm sitting next to on airplanes, because, you know, for however long we're in the air, it's sort of a captive audience, and you can have more than just 5 minutes to talk about these things. And I've had some really interesting conversations, actually made some really great friends ultimately on planes, where, you know, you start asking them, like, you know, hey, what do you do? And, you know, that kind of thing. And then, you know, start asking them just, you know, their positions on things. And, you know, so what'd you think of the debate, for example? And a lot of people really want to talk about politics. But I was even having a conversation with a woman at the premiere for Daily Wire for Matt Walsh's movie. And talking about this whole idea, you know, of racism and DEI and all that. And then we got from that kind of springboarded into the whole topic of pro-life and that whole conversation. And, you know, for someone and this woman, you know, was saying that even though she chose to have her own children, you know, she still came from the perspective, like a lot of people do, unfortunately, that say, well, you know, that was my choice, but I don't feel like I could ever make that decision for someone else because, you know, their life is different. They're in different circumstances. And I just started asking questions like, you know, well, why do you think that? And, you know, do you think that the government has an obligation and a duty to protect life like they do a duty to protect, you know, you and I against evildoers? And, you know, they have an interest in protecting our lives. Why not the interest in protecting the unborn? And, you know, some of these questions that in a longer format discussion, you can have those conversations. And it was a really great discussion. And then, you know, I ended up staying out way too late because it was a really good and fascinating discussion. But the bottom line here is that movies like this are important. Conversations like this are important. Education like this is important because we need to be equipped to have the tools to take not just our faith and evangelize. That's incredibly important. That's first and foremost, the important thing is to fulfill the Great Commission, go into the world and teach the truth of Christ and to bring more people with us into the kingdom of God. And with that, we also need to be able to educate on, okay, then once you are living the Christian life, what does that look like in society? How do we take our value of truth and go into a civil society that, for the most part right now, at least in the United States of America, is not Christian? It's very pluralistic. If you even ask someone, you know, what their faith is, and they say, well, I'm a Christian, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have the biblical worldview. That doesn't actually necessarily even mean that they are saved. And you have to ask them more than that and just say, well, what does that mean to you? How would you describe why you are a Christian or what that means? And we have to be able ultimately to provide an answer for the hope that lies within us about the person of Jesus, about the truth, and about our salvation, and then how we live our lives in light of that truth. And one of the main things that we do daily is to testify to the truth of God in every forum that we are in, whether it is at work being a good employee, whether it is in civil society and advocating for the truth of God, whether it is being good parents, good children, respecting and honoring our parents, whether it is in the church and being part of the ecclesia, if you are men or still engaging and using your gifts and skills and talents in ministry. You should not just be part of a church, but you should find a ministry within the church that you give back to the church and you are part of the ministry. I teach a class on Wednesday nights at my church because I'm a member there now, and I'm using my skills and talents to teach about the biblical worldview of government to a class at my church. And then also ministry in civil society. We need to be engaged and living out our faith, because liberty and freedom is not ultimately just self-interested. It is in the sense that we want to be able to exercise our freedom and liberty. We want to be able to raise our children in the way that they should go. We are self-interested in a sense, but not just for that purpose. We need to be ultimately interested in promoting the things of God and doing the work of Christians. You know, we talked about doing the work, and that's the vagary of Kamala Harris, and they say, oh, do the work to combat racism. Well, I would suggest that we as Christians need to do the work of testifying daily to the truth of the Word of God, whether it is that explicitly, or whether it is just by our actions, by our ministries, and the way that we engage in civil society with the biblical worldview. Because law as a whole permeates everything we do that governs civil society. So that law ultimately needs to reflect the truth, just like the law that God imposed in the moral law shows us our need for salvation and ultimately points us back to God. Our law in government and civil society, in our churches, ultimately needs to point back to the truth of the Word of God. So the encouragement beyond, go see Matt Walsh's movie, go to amiracist.com and see his movie, and that'll help equip you even more to engage in society. But you know, well beyond that, daily, do the work of living Christianly. But you have to be equipped and you have to know why you are doing what you're doing, making the daily choices to engage, not just out of self-interest, but to promote the truth and to worship God through everything that we do. So go into this weekend, enjoy it, and let me know if you see the movie, what you think of it. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net, and have a wonderful weekend. We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.